Blog Talk Radio.
You can't do that. What are you thinking? You are not good enough. You are not going to get that job. You don't have an education. What? That is for smart people, not you. That outfit doesn't look good on you. You look ridiculous. You want to go where? With what? Money you don't have? Remember, you're broke and worthless. Nobody loves you. This is the voice of the toxic ego, the voice that is holding you back from your divine life. Dr. Nydia is here to guide you in learning to let go of this voice. She is here to teach you inner work, a journey through the soul, to empower you in creating a passageway to spiritual development. Dr. Nydia received her PhD from Union Institute and University in Psychology with emphasis in addiction studies. She is a registered clinical social worker intern and received her master's degree from Barry University. She is a certified addiction professional for the state of Florida. She is also a Reiki master, healing touch practitioner, and a master hypnotherapist. For more information, visit her website at www.dranidia.com. Dr. Nydia. Now, please welcome your host of Inner Work, Dr. Nydia.
And good afternoon. This is Dr. Nydia.
And this is Alma. Good afternoon.
How are you, Alma?
Hi, I'm okay.
Well, we've been out of touch for the last few weeks.
Yes, yes. Things that happen in life that you have to take care of.
Yeah, things happen. Life happens. And we get very busy, and before you know it, this weekend I was passing stones, kidney stones.
Yeah, it wasn't so fun.
No, it was not funny at all. So our call-in numbers are 646-200-4169. You can call the show today, and if you need to get in touch with me at any other time, it's 786-477-8534. That's my call-in number for when I'm not on the air. Have any questions or any concerns, give me a call at 786-477-8534. And the call-in number for here for the studio is 646-200-4169.
And the topic today is love.
What is love?
All you need is love. Love is a big word.
Yeah, well, so let's make it simple.
Okay.
What is love? The simplest definition for love.
It's
one word.
It's a feeling.
Nope.
No, I don't know.
Do you know that love, you don't feel it?
I know.
No, you don't feel love. It's not something that, no, that's not love. That's passion. That's chemicals.
Uh-huh.
But real, true love,
mm-hmm.
You don't really feel it because it's unconditional.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that?
No.
Well, real true love is something that it's unconditional. There are no conditions to it. You let people be who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You don't judge. When you truly love someone, you know that you love them because you don't judge them. You accept them just the way they are. You don't try to change them. You know, we get into relationships and immediately we start finding fault with the other person. That's mm-hmm. not love. The chemical part, let's start there. The chemical part, when we fall in love, you know, love at first sight and all that, I'm so in love. No, that's the chemicals in your body. As human beings, and not even human beings, the animals, and we're animals, we're of the animal kingdom, it's a physical thing.
Uh-huh.
Haven't you noticed that when you quote unquote fall in love, you can't stop touching each other?
Yes.
You're like a couple of jackrabbits jumping on each other every 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's not love. That we call it love, but it's really just sex.
Yes.
Now, what happens with the sex? The sex is fine because you know it's part of procreating, and we become attracted to each other that way.
Mm-hmm.
But how many people don't you have sex with that you don't, well, maybe not us women as much as men, but, you know, men have sex with just about anybody, you know, of the opposite sex or the same sex.
Or the same sex.
Right? And they're not necessarily trying to have babies.
Mm-hmm.
They're not procreating. They're just having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no emotional attachment to it. Women, yeah, because women, you know, give sex to be loved, and men give love to have sex, see? But it's just a physical thing in the beginning. Love is something that you nurture and grows. Now, once the chemicals go away, what's left?
The reality.
That's right. The reality. Oh, my God.
Yes,
what am I? Whoa, what the hell are you?
Now you can start smell things that you don't like.
Yeah. Now you start
see things that you don't like.
Right.
And to hurt things that you don't like.
When you're in the chemical phase of the relationship, you see things and you notice things, but you ignore them because you say, it's not important. There are more important things, you know, let's climb on each other's bones. That's the chemical part of what we call love. That's not love.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens is that once the chemicals subside, and they do subside, you can't live like that. You know, where you don't go to work for 2 or 3 days because you're having sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you know, the passion is there and you don't do all the other things that you normally would do because, you know, the love, so to speak. The reality is that once the chemicals subside and they go away, you look at the other person and you say, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get bored. You don't want to continue to have a relationship with that person unless you've created that attraction, that love.
Mm-hmm.
See? Now, love is unconditional. Look around and see how many people are around you that you unconditionally love. What does that mean?
That I don't try to change them. I just accept them like they are.
Just the way they are. And then some people say to me, well, what if I don't like the way they are? Well, then get out of the relationship.
Yeah.
Because that's not love. If you don't like the way they are, then you don't like the way they are. Mm-hmm. When you truly love someone, like a parent that truly loves their child, they allow them to grow up and get married and make decisions and choose the careers that they want. You know, we have parents that are constantly fighting with their kids because I don't want you to be a fireman. I want you to be a doctor. And the kid is as dumb as a rock, but I want him to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Somehow a miracle is going to happen and he's going to pass the medical board. Hello. And we don't accept the fact that I want to be a musician, not a doctor.
Yeah.
You may be smart enough to be a doctor, but you want to be a musician. And a lot of parents won't let them. I'm gay, so I'm not loved by my parents because I'm gay. I'm whatever.
Yes.
See? And so when you truly love your child, it doesn't matter whether they're black or white or tall or short or gay or lesbian or musician or doctor. It doesn't matter. See? But when we judge our children or other people because they're not what I think they should be, then is that love? Is that true love?
No.
No. When you talk about your soulmate.
Yes.
What's your soulmate?
My soulmate, I don't know. The tradition says this is the person that likes things that I like, that is my half. I don't know how to explain that.
Well, we make a big mistake mm-hmm. when we think that our soulmate is what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
What you just said was that what?
That the soulmate is the person that is your half. How do you call that?
Your other half.
Yeah, it's complicated for me in English. But when the person that is like you or that likes the same things that you like and you're compatible with.
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
No. Your soulmate is the person who expands your soul the most.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Explain to me. I don't know. I
you have no idea.
No, I just told you. I imagine, but I don't know how to explain
the person who, how can I put it? The person you least expect to be your soulmate is your soulmate. The person
it doesn't have to be my partner. My
no, it friend. Never is your partner.
Mm-hmm.
It never is your partner because your soulmate is the person you hate the most.
I was going to say, so you are my soulmate, but I don't hate you.
No, because, well, you could love your soulmate, but it depends on who has expanded your soul the
yes.
most.
Yes.
For instance, my father tortured me when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
For years and years and years, I thought it would never end. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's my soulmate. Because of him, I'm doing what I'm doing now. See what I mean?
Yeah. But you have to convince a lot of people of that.
Because well, the thing is that we're so used to thinking that my soulmate is going to be the man I'm going to spend the rest of my life or the woman or whoever that
yeah.
I'm going to spend the rest of my life with.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to, we're going to be happy and we're going to have children and we're going to have this and we're going to have that. No, that's not your soulmate.
See?
In Spanish, it's called alma gemela.
Yeah. Yeah, but from there to say your father that taught you, I understand the concept that
mm-hmm.
he made possible on you, you know, your growth, spiritual growth and everything.
Yes.
But it's difficult for
it's
me.
It's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
But look at this. My father was I want to say cruel,
mm-hmm.
which he was in the human sense,
mm-hmm.
but in the spiritual sense, he was trying to teach me a lesson. And I used to say he tried to break me. He tried to break my spirit. And your spirit and your soul, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
See? He tried to break my spirit. He tortured me. He tried to take away from me who I truly was. No, on the contrary. He was able to help me to cut through all the nonsense. See, I was the type of child, and I'm not saying that I deserved anything that he did to me, but I was the type of child that I'm sure I was attention deficit because
mm-hmm.
I had the attention span of a 3-year-old when I was 20 and today. Mm-hmm. See, but What he did was he defocused me from the part of me that had no structure. And it's not that he gave me structure. It's really difficult to explain because he didn't give me any structure. He didn't teach me discipline or anything like that. What he taught me was pain and more pain and more pain to the point where I understood the human element of pain, you know, to the deepest
and how to avoid it.
No, not to avoid it, how to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
How
okay.
to eliminate it completely. A lot of people avoid it by taking pills, by drinking, by fighting, by, see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I went through all those phases. But had I not had the experience in the beginning, which is the base of everything else,
mm-hmm.
was my father, the way my father treated me, he taught me that at a spiritual level, I didn't have to stay the way I was at a human level. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You have to remember that there's the human level and then there's the higher level, which is the spiritual level.
Yeah, I understand. I understand everything.
But our listeners may not.
I'm sure they don't. Because, you know, I understand your life and everything that happens to you. And it's knowing that how you reacted, I can say that you could die in a lot of time.
A lot of time.
From the treatment your father gave you, and you could change because you survived.
I survived.
Because you are a very strong person.
But not only that. Let's not get off the top.
Uh-huh.
Not only what I learned from the torture of my father,
mm-hmm.
but then I had children.
Yes.
And I didn't have one sick child. I didn't have two sick children. I had three terminally ill children to some degree or another.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean?
Yes.
So when my firstborn was born, they told me he was going to die within hours. And then they said, well, within 72 hours. They told me when he was born that he would die that night. He wouldn't live through the night.
Mm-hmm.
Then they told me 72 hours. Then they told me throughout all the years that he was going to die any minute, which was true, that he did. He ran the risk of sudden death. And my daughter was born with a heart condition that I didn't find out she had until she was 5 years old. And then they told me we have to do surgery on her right away because she's dying. You wait another 2 or 3 weeks and she's going to die. And within 2 weeks, she had open heart surgery. And then my third child was born pretty much with the same heart condition, but he was brain damaged. He had damage to the central nervous system. You know, it's like not just one child. You know, most people have one child that's very sick, and, you know, they stay with that child to the end, and then they lose or they don't lose the child, and, you know, end the story. I had three children. You know, it was, like, mind-boggling. I couldn't be like everybody else, just have one sick child. I had to have three. And then my fourth child was born with some kind of intestinal thing. He lost all his blood. They thought he had leukemia. He had lost 99% of his blood within the first 3 weeks of his life. Because he had some kind of a hemorrhage. He turned white. I mean, he turned white. His lips were white. You know how there's always color in your lips? No, he had no lips. He was baptized in the hospital. He was given last rites in the hospital.
Oh, my God.
He was baptized. My friend baptized him in the hospital because they didn't think he was going to make it. And now he's in the army. He's the only one that recovered from everything. But the other three, you know, well, I lost one of them, and then the other two, my daughter had congestive heart failure when she had her baby, and then several times after that. But the point is that when you're growing spiritually, I could have gone either way. I could have been totally resentful because, you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have stayed drinking and I could have blamed everybody. And you know what happens in the dynamic of a family when one person is being mistreated, the rest of the family bonds with the person that mistreats. Did I make myself clear? No. Okay. My father was the abuser.
Uh-huh.
See? So everybody bonded with him. So then they thought it was okay to abuse me.
Mm.
See?
Okay.
And I have family members where I just stopped talking to them because they still don't get it, that they can't yell at me, they can't hit me, they can't be nasty to me, but they are. See?
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten to the point where when you're nasty with me, when you yell at me, I do not need that kind of person in my life.
Of course.
And I'm not angry at them. I know that this is the way they were brought up. They were brought up to believe that it was okay to do that. See?
Mm-hmm.
And some of these people believe that, well, why would I get upset when them yelling at me when they're, you know, that's my job to be yelled at. No, it's not. See? It's not. I don't have to be anybody's punching bag. You don't have to be anybody's punching bag.
Yeah.
See? But the dynamic is that just because one person does it, it doesn't mean that the rest of everybody else doesn't get affected. Everybody else bonds with the abuser.
Yeah.
You know, books are written about that.
Yeah. You can see that in the schools in everywhere.
Exactly.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the thing is that it wasn't the damage that was done wasn't that people in my family just think that they can do it to me. They do it to others, and they do it to their children. And I know they do it to their children because their children come to me and complain about it.
Mm-hmm.
And say my mother or my brother or whoever doesn't realize, you know, that they're being cruel because this is what they learned. So that's the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have stayed an alcoholic and I could stay drinking and stay using drugs and, you know, doing all the crazy things that I did. I chose not to do that. So when I got clean, my head was clear enough to look back and say, wait a minute, I don't have to continue to live that way. So I got out. I got out and I learned how to do things differently, but I understand what that pain is all about. And I know that there are a lot of people that are going through that same pain. People of my era that were brought up in cruelty. See? And they haven't learned how to get out from that cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
That's my mission. All those forgotten, you know, they have the inner child thing. Well, there's a lot of us that grew up in that era where we were as children because it was common, you know, it was common to mistreat a child and kick a child and abuse them and torture them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of people who are grown up, adult children that are still suffering the pain of when they were being tortured, see? And they don't know what I know. Only because I was able to see it. You know, it doesn't make me any better.
And you stop to being a victim.
I stopped being a victim. So when it comes to love, see, my father wanted me to be a doctor, which I'm glad he died before I became a doctor. Never gave him the satisfaction. The thing is that he wanted me to be a doctor, and I said, I want to be a secretary. And he said, no, and he cut me off. He said, you know what? I'm done with you. And as far as I'm concerned, you're not my daughter anymore. only because I wanted to be, I didn't know, I wanted to be a secretary. It was easy. I knew how to, you know, I could do it, kind of, sort of, or I thought I could do it. Point is that he didn't want me to be what I wanted to be. He wanted me to be, and I was still experimenting in what I wanted to be. I didn't really know. I just knew that, you know, everybody was a secretary. Everybody was a secretary. And so I got jobs working in pools, you know, secretarial pools, which I was not very good at, you know, in reality. But that being said, he didn't want me to be anything but what he wanted me to be. See? And with my dyslexia, it was really very difficult because there was a lot of reading involved.
At that time.
And so anyway, the point is that when you want to, when you talk about love, it has to be unconditional. You can't say you love your children and then you're demanding them to do what they don't want to do. And let me tell you something. A lot of our children are the way they are because we don't realize that we're not here to force them to be what we want them to be. We don't let them, even as little children, we don't teach them. We don't teach them to be responsible. We don't let them sit there for 45 minutes trying to learn how to tie their shoelaces.
We don't do what the animals do. The animals get the babies, and they teach them how to walk, how to
look at the birds.
Yeah.
The birds, you know, the mother feeds them because until they're strong enough to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And then she doesn't say, okay, yeah, this is the way you fly. She says, okay, you're done. Get out. And she throws them out of the nest.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't learn how to fly between you, when you were pushed off the nest and you land, oh, well, too bad. Splat.
Yes.
Yeah? Because the mother will. And you know, I have a tree in front of my house. It's a mango tree. Mm-hmm. And the birds have a nest there. And every now and then I see the baby birds on the ground,
oh,
on the grass. And so the mother will come and take it out of the grass and push it to the side so nobody will step on it, and we'll protect it. But we'll not pick it up. The mother will not pick it up and take it back to the tree and push it back down again. No, the mother just leaves it there and just protects it and keeps it safe. Because I have two cats. I have one left. And so it'll jump on the cats. The mother bird and the father bird will jump and scream and holler and pick at the cat so that the cat doesn't eat the bird, but does not take the bird out of danger. In other words, if the bird has to stay there. When you get stronger and you start moving around,
they'll give them a few opportunities,
but will not do it for them.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Yeah.
They'll protect you, and you know, I'll protect you until you can take care of yourself. Once you can take care of yourself, well, it's up to you to get away from the cat.
Mm-hmm.
See? And I know that whenever the birds are making noise around my house, I know one of the birds fell out or didn't start flying the way the rest of them did.
Yeah.
You know, because they will protect it because, you know, they do. That's what they do. But the whole point is that we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Miami. I live in Broward County, but I live in the, you know, Miami area. And in the Miami area, 16-year-olds have BMWs.
Yeah.
And they're smoking and they're drinking and they're using drugs and driving their BMWs because, oh, you have to go to school, so we have to give you, I'll drive the Chevy, you can have the BMW, because it's a safer car.
Yes.
See? And it's like mind-boggling, because these kids don't have to earn it.
Yeah.
All I have to do is be 16 years old. Oh, you pass your driving test. You have your permit. Here are the keys. You know, and I see some of these kids where they're demanding, I want. Give me. You have to give me. I tell you about my friend. She put her son in a military school. She caught him smoking pot once. And, of course, if you've been smoking pot once, you've already been doing it for a while. She put him in a military school. And you should see. The kid is now, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. It's like, wow. You know, even she's amazed at how well he's doing. Because she said, no, I'm losing him. And she sees, you know, she lives in the area where all these kids are using drugs, and she sees how easy it is for them to just stop caring about themselves and destroy themselves. And he's doing really, really good because she said, no, if you're going to die, I'm not going to help you.
So love is let them be.
Let them be.
Train them and teach them.
Teach
to
them.
Be, you know, self
responsible.
Yeah.
She taught him responsibility. She said to him, before she even sent him to the military school, she said, you are responsible for all the choices that you make. So give me your phone. Why? Because I'm not going to reward you for smoking pot. And giving you a phone is a reward. It's a privilege. I don't have to give you a phone. And I'm not going to give you anything that I don't have to. You have food. You have clothes. You're going to school. I don't have to give you anything else. And he went, but. And so every time he got mad, she said, I don't understand why you're getting mad. You chose to lose your privilege. And if you chose to lose your privilege, why would you get mad? Choose not to lose your privilege. You can make that choice. And then he would yell at her. And she'd say, well, I don't appreciate you yelling at me.
But the thing is, the parents, they don't understand the concept.
They don't understand.
Because it's the fault of the parents most of the time.
Let's not fault anybody. We don't know how to teach children how to be responsible because we're not responsible. How can I teach you to be responsible if I'm not being responsible? Mm-hmm. I would tell my kids, if I catch you drinking and smoking, I'll kick your ass while I was drinking and smoking with a cigarette in my hand and a drink in my hand. Mm-hmm. See? So talk doesn't work. Yelling at your kids doesn't work. So you give them choices. And we work together. We work very hard together. And I told my friend, I said, listen, if you put him in the military school, he may not learn what you want him to learn. But at least you've done everything possible that's within your ability to do to teach him how to be responsible. You can't teach him what a military school can teach him. Because there are people there who couldn't care less about him. You love him, so you don't want to see him suffer. They don't care. You know, if they have to keep him marching all night, they'll keep him marching all night. You won't do that. See? So you have to turn him over to people who love him enough, which is the difference between caring and loving.
Mm-hmm.
See? Who love him enough to force him to do something he doesn't want to do. See?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's working. In the beginning, mm-hmm. she was saying, oh, my God, he's crying and he doesn't want to be there. I'm going to bring him home. I said, no, that's the worst thing you can do. You can bring him home, but then don't complain when you start using drugs again. See?
No, and if she says one thing and she...
Her integrity is shot.
Yes.
Yes. But no, she stood fast. She cried a lot in the beginning. But she stood fast. She said, no, no, and no. And she let him know that if I take the phone away from you, if I tell you you can't be texting all night, and I catch you texting, I'm taking the phone away. You're giving up your phone. So she caught him texting. So she took the phone away. And then when he complained, I don't have a phone, well, you gave it up. You decided not to follow the rules. So what are you complaining about? See?
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, he got it. See? In the beginning, in the first few months, it was him crying all the time because he wanted to come home. Now, he's talking about staying there. Finish. He wants to finish high school there. Yeah. Because he's, you know, he'll be out in June.
Because the structure,
mm-hmm.
I think when people understand how it works, it's very comfortable.
It's very comfortable.
Because they just have to do what they have to do. You know, focus in their studies. They have everything in this kind of place, military places. They have their time to play,
yes.
Their time to...
There's a lot of structure. Yes. There is a lot of structure.
And in the house, most of the time, you know, the mother works, the father works, mm-hmm. Everybody's doing their thing. They don't have time for the children, and the children grow up as they want.
Well, now he's coming out of there. He's going to be 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's a man. And mom's told him, you're a man now. When you come out of here, you've got to come out. You finish high school. You get a job. Or you go to college. Well, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Don't call me ma'am. Yes, ma'am. But he's taking responsibility. He had done something. Lost his rank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a very high rank, and he lost it. And he told his mother. He said, "I lost it because," and he took responsibility for why he lost it.
Oh.
He didn't blame anybody.
Nice.
He said, "I was supposed to report somebody for doing something that he wasn't doing, and I didn't report him." So now, from what I hear, last week he got his rank back. But because he earned it, not because, and he knows, you want something, you have to earn it. See, I'm a professor at a university, and a lot of my students tell me, you gave me a grade, why did you give me this grade? And I tell them, I didn't give you that grade. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. You earned that grade. Depending upon the work that you did, that's the grade that you got. Every time you turned in your work, you turned it in late. Well, but you let me turn it in. Well, would you have rather fail the course? Or would you have rather let me open the course up so that you can submit your work? Just because you submit the work doesn't mean you're going to get a better grade. You have to turn your work in on time. If I have to go back in there and open it up for you, for you to go in there and submit your work, then that's on you. That's not on me. I didn't tell you to go do whatever it was that you were doing instead of doing your homework.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a single mother. Well, then if you're not ready to go to school, then come back when you're ready. Oh, they get really upset about that. I'm doing the best I can. Well, hey, your crisis is not my crisis. Yeah, I've bent over backwards for my students, especially if they're doing what they're supposed to do in there, and they're, you know, if they find it difficult, then we talk on the phone and they do their work, and still they turn in their work on time. See, so I'm eager to give them an excellent grade because I know that even if the work is not an A grade, they're really doing 100% of what they have to do. So I give them an A. Or a high B.
Mm.
See? But when you come and you give me crappy work, and on top of that, you're 2 weeks late, and now you're behind on other work. See? Mm. And you don't call me, and you don't tell me anything, and you want me to give you an A? I don't think so.
Yeah.
See, unconditional love means you're going to earn the grade that you earn. That you earn, not that I give you. I don't give you grades. And most people don't understand that. Most people have excuses for everything. But the excuse does not justify the not doing what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
See? Why are you late for work every Monday? Well, traffic and blah, 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 and all of this and all of that, and my kids and work. But it really doesn't matter. Doesn't matter why you're late. I don't ask my people why they're late. Ever. I tell them you're late. And if I'm going to dock you when I work at the clinic, if I'm gonna dock you for not doing your work or for being late or whatever, don't come asking me why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm doing it because that's what you earn. No, you came in 2 hours. In the groups that I run, you're allowed to be 10 minutes late. Because I know things happen sometimes, you know, you're just coming in under the wire. After that, there are people that want to come in 15 minutes before, 10 minutes before the class is over. So, no, you can't come in. I mean, you can come in and you can sit down, come in quietly, don't interrupt, but you can't sign in. Mm. I'm not giving you credit for the class when you weren't here for the class.
Of course.
See? So it's important to understand that we need to let people we need to let them make mistakes. It's okay to make a mistake. There's nothing wrong with making a mistake. How are you going to learn if you don't make mistakes? Right?
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison once said, how do you justify having made 50,000 mistakes? And you still keep going. And he said, I haven't made any mistakes. I just know 50,000 things that don't work for what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
See? So now that didn't work. Okay, fine. Next. It's not a mistake. It's a matter of try this, doesn't work, next. Try this, doesn't work, next.
You don't know if it's going to work or not.
Exactly. And so, if you try something, see, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting different results.
Mm-hmm.
It makes absolutely no sense to me that you would keep doing the same thing over and over again and complaining that it doesn't work. I know people, some of my clients, they say, oh, I told my husband over for the last 10 years. I've been telling him the same thing over and over again, and he doesn't listen. And I say to him, well, has it worked? Have you telling him over and over again for the last 10 years worked? They say, no. Well, why do you keep telling him? If it didn't work the last time you told him, what makes you think it's going to work now? That's insane. That's insanity. That's the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. See?
Yeah.
When you love a person, you don't have to tell them anything. I will tell my son is brain damaged, and I tell him when he does something that I don't like. For instance, he cooks for me. And so he puts a lot of salt on my food sometimes. And so he doesn't do it too much anymore. But I told him once, I said, you know what? My doctor told me that too much salt brings up my blood pressure. And so I can't eat a lot of stuff that's salty. So he stopped putting so much salt on my food. I didn't tell him to stop. See?
Yes.
Because my doctor did tell me, stop using so much salt. Stop using salt, period. See? So I told him, my doctor said I can't have salt. So now he doesn't put salt in my food. Well, sometimes he'll.
Yeah.
But I know that he's making every effort not to do it. Sometimes he's a night owl. So he'll get up in the middle of the night and start cleaning the house. So I have to tell him once, the vacuum cleaner late at night wakes me up. So now he doesn't use the vacuum cleaner late at night. See?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to say, why are you making so much noise and all of this. And no, I don't have to say anything. I just tell him, it bothers me. I can't sleep, and then I can't get up in the morning to go to work. See? You don't have...
Yeah, but let me tell you, he should react in the best way, because he's doing whatever is bothering you, you know? He's changing the way doing it, because I'm sure he's used to your kind of language. You know, you said this, and you are saying this because...
Actually, no.
But let me tell you, I talk and I have relationship with people that doesn't have any brain damage. And I said to these people, this thing is bothering me because of the time of the... It's not because... I want this or I don't want that. No, it's not. It's for a logic thing. It's 3 a.m. Could you please, you know, power the light off or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And these people is like, they don't care. They continue to do it.
Well, then you have to sit down and let them know. It's unacceptable you have to at some point let people know that if one thing isn't working, you try something else.
Mm-hmm.
See? So if the lights are bothering you at 3 o'clock in the morning, you simply say at 3 o'clock in the morning, that light has to come out. And if it doesn't, you undo the light, okay, and break it, throw it in the garbage, whatever. But you have, you know, sometimes there are some people that you have to yell at. Not yell at as in screaming or something,
yes,
but you have to be firm and say, it is unacceptable. I am not going to accept this.
Yes.
If you want to read in the middle of the night, you want to watch, go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
See? When I was married to my husband, he used to watch TV every night.
Yeah, that's an example.
Well, you know what I did? One day when he came home, the TV was not in the bedroom anymore. You have to be willing to do that.
Of course.
So there was no more television in the bedroom. I used to love to watch TV while I was in bed and ready right before. But then I wanted to turn it off, and he wanted to keep it on, and I So I took it out of the living room. And I told, and he said, no, I'm putting it back in the bedroom. You do, and I'll break it. And he knew I would. See, you have to be firm. You can't be wishy-washy about things. Come on, turn it off. Come on, I want to go to sleep. Well, if that doesn't work, then hey, I'm moving it out of here. It can't be in here. The bedroom is only for two things.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is sleeping. What's the other one? Okay? You have to be firm. But you have to be firm in everything. My son knows that I am firm with everything. When I say this is it, I'm not wishy-washy about it. I'm not sometimes you can do it, sometimes you can't. No, you can't do this. So he knows. See? But if you let this other person, these other people get away with things, other things, then when you're really serious, they're not going to take you seriously. It has to be with everything,
mm-hmm,
not with just one thing.
Yeah.
See, it's unconditional love means not worrying about the other person getting upset. Let them get upset. But you have a problem with that.
Yeah.
See, you don't want people to get upset, so you don't do anything to make waves. You have to make waves.
The thing is not that I don't want them to get upset. is when they got upset. So there is a big possibility I get upset, and I don't want to get upset.
And, yeah, and I understand that. Then you leave. Then you get up and you leave. You have to do it not just in one situation. You have to do it in all situations. Well, sometimes you say, oh, I'm not going to say anything to that person because that person's going to get upset.
Mm-hmm.
That person has trained you not to say anything to them.
Yeah.
See?
Mm-hmm.
So why can't you train that person in the opposite? Because if people can train you, you can train them. There are things that I'm just not going to put up with. I mean, I'm easygoing to you have no idea because I'm like you. I don't want any problems.
Yeah.
However, and that however is very big. See, you, my kids, my family knows you can do anything you want to me. When you start messing with my peace and my tranquility, I'm done with you. I don't care who you are. You mess with my peace and my tranquility, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
So except for those family members who still don't get it, which I now don't talk to. See? Everybody else, even my kids. My kids know better than to go into my room when I'm sleeping or make noise when I'm sleeping because I have post-traumatic stress disorder. And that could really set me off into a big, you know, I'll start screaming and running around and going crazy, and I'll be asleep. See? And then I wind up hurting myself because I bump into things. I will literally run straight out of off my bed. And I'm in the air, so I wind up falling and hurting myself. So my kids know better than to. See?
Yeah.
So you have to make a splash. In other words, you have to be firm. There are some things I will not put up with. No, 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 I don't want to hear it. No, 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 I'm done, I'm done, I'm done. That's it. And I don't even let them talk to me. There's nothing they can say to me that will make me change my mind. You yell at me, I'm done with you. In my job, I had a girl. We were very good friends, two of them. And they both, at one point or another, decided to yell at me, but I mean, really get nasty and cold. And I mean, they were really, really vicious. I turned around, and that was it. And one of them said to me, why don't you talk to me? I said, because I have zero tolerance for people who yell at me, so I'm done with you. But, well, I didn't mean to yell. Well, see, that's too bad. You did. I'm done. Another one says to me, are we good? I said, no, we're not good. Why? Because you yelled at me. Nobody yelled at me. Can't do that. No. Can't touch me. Can't. I have zero tolerance for being yelled at. I'm done. See?
Yeah.
And people just don't understand. Why doesn't she talk to me anymore? No, because I'm not going to put myself in a position where you're going to be able to do that to me again, ever. See? So it's a matter, and there's one of those two girls, I do still talk, I started talking to her again, only because she did something really, really, really extraordinarily nice. But still, I treat her at a distance. We don't have that friendship that we used to have.
Yeah.
See? So it's a matter of unconditional love means letting the other person be who they are. So if you yell at me, I don't have to talk to you, but I'm not going to torture you and I'm not going to mistreat you. I allow you to be who you are. You are who you are. And I love you regardless of who you are. But you can't be in my space because I know that you're going to hurt me again.
Yes.
See? And so I can't allow that to happen. That's what unconditional love is. And the thing about unconditional love is we think that because I tell you that what's wrong with your hair, why don't you wear your hair this way, why don't you wear this clothes, why don't you do that, why don't you... No, if you have nothing to say nice about a person, don't say anything. See? Why would I want to keep telling you what's wrong with you when there's so much that's right with you. See? And this is what we have to look at. When you talk about unconditional love, it means unconditional love. So I love all of my family members unconditionally. They can do with their lives whatever they want to do. They just can't do it in my space because I have a right to my space,
of course.
See? So I think we're already out of time.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was nice to have you here again.
Yes.
And we're going to finish with How Can Anyone Ever Tell You?
Shame
and
no.
And hope to see you
next week. Hopefully.
Bye. Bye.